Again, good morning or afternoon, everyone, and welcome to EMForum.org. I am Amy Sebring and will serve as your host and moderator today, and we are very glad you could join us. For any first-timers, we will be providing some instructions as we go along so you can relax and participate with us, and we do want you to take part in this discussion. If you need assistance, please select Help Desk from the drop-down options in the Q&A panel or in the chat, and our associate, Lori Weber, will try to assist you. Our program today is about large-scale evacuation planning and new guidance resources from the Transportation Research Board's National Cooperative Highway Research Program. First, for any first-timers, we will begin with an overview presentation, and then we will proceed to your questions or comments. We will provide further instructions just before we begin the Q&A, but we ask you not to submit your question or comment until we do get to that part of the program. You may wish to make a note of any questions you have as we go along. Today's recordings and a copy of the slides will be available from our site later this afternoon, and then a transcript will be available early next week. Now, it is my very great pleasure to introduce Deborah Matherly, Principal Investigator and Principal Planner with the Lewis Berger Group, Inc. This is her second visit with us, and a previous related program focused on communicating with vulnerable populations is available from our archives. Welcome back, Deborah, and thank you very much for taking the time to be with us today. I now turn the floor over to you to start us off, please.
Okay. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. This is a very timely topic. We've recently had some killer floods in Colorado and major wildfires in Montana, Wyoming, and Idaho, as well as in Washington, Oregon, California, Nevada, Arizona, New Mexico, and Oklahoma. We haven't had any major hurricanes this year in the U.S., but there have been some in Mexico, and New York and New Jersey are still recovering from Hurricane Sandy, where they had some significant evacuations as well. And we'll go through this. Let's see. Okay, that worked. Okay, I'll go through this fairly quickly because I do want to have time for questions. Basically, I want to give you an overview of our project on some of the key findings from the study that we did for National Cooperative Highway Research Program. In our tasks, we did the normal literature review and lots of interviews and such. We also held two workshops with transportation and emergency management professionals. Both of those were in Missouri with two different groups. We showed them our tools and our outline when we were, you know, partway through the project. And one of the things we learned, particularly from the emergency managers, is that they really wanted a clearer linkage between emergency management processes and tools and transportation. They want something that speaks their language as well as transportation's language. So as we were developing the project, we did have a study team that includes communications experts, a couple of people who are experts on evacuation and transportation modeling, Louisiana State, and John Rennie, they have lots of experience with that. And also emergency management expertise from both from within Berger and with a couple of our partners. We had a very good panel. All NCHRP projects have a panel of experts to guide the research. And our program officer, Stephen Parker, is very, very good and professional and gives great advice. So we didn't do it alone. Okay. You probably know evacuations happen every day, from small evacuations for apartment fires or minor flooding, larger ones for wildfires, hurricanes, hazmat spills, train derailments, chemical spills, and terrorism. One of the challenges in evacuation is that transportation is always a major asset and especially needed for evacuation, but transportation and emergency management haven't always worked closely together in planning. So one of the focuses is for this project in particular is when you get to large scale evacuations, you're working with many, many different agencies that you may not normally work with for incidents, et cetera. You're working with multiple modes, probably many jurisdictions that you don't deal with on a normal basis, and many levels of government, everything from local to regional to state, tribal and federal, and sometimes international, if they're along the borders. And then also private and nonprofit entities need to be included, both those who are service providers and those who have a normal emergency focus. So it can get very complicated very quickly. Among the key findings are that there are some lessons that are just typical for general coordination between transportation and emergency management. One of the key things is to prepare and train and practice, and it's very important to consider also populations with access and functional needs. Too much evacuation planning tends to assume that everyone has a car and can get out on their own, but that is not the case, and so planning has to take that into consideration. In terms of adapting existing practices and resources, one consideration is that many times when a region is planning for special events such as a large concert, large ball games, et cetera, or 4th of July celebrations, that many of the practices and the coordination and the conversations that are held for special event planning can also be very useful for evacuation planning. And some places deliberately use their large events to practice their evacuation plans and strategies. As I mentioned, the emergency managers were very interested in having something that looks and feels like emergency management speak. This graphic of the steps are from the Comprehensive Preparedness Guide 101 developed by the Federal Emergency Management Agency. And we decided partway through the project that these steps are very close to what we had been saying, yeah, that's what we need to do anyway. So we adopted it, but then in doing that, we included all of the very transportation-oriented tools and information that we had gathered. So we were able to use the FEMA framework but for our transportation focus. And you'll see that there's several meetings identified here, and we think there's actually, you need more meetings than that to do this kind of evacuation planning effectively. But we started with this. So the guide organization follows CPG 101 pretty much, and then has some additional resources. We'll walk through it. Mentioned, now step one, form a collaborative planning team. We think this is very important. As we mentioned, when you're working with many agencies, many jurisdictions, up and down the local, regional, state levels, it's very important that, that people get together and are talking. One of the tools we developed is possible frameworks for integrating modes for effective evacuation. The convener agencies for multimodal evacuation. We don't say who should be that leader, but we do say it doesn't necessarily have to be the emergency manager who would be actually in charge of most of the evacuation, but it could be a transit agency, it could be a metropolitan planning organization. We just suggest a framework that you need to have somebody who's good at talking to lots of people and getting lots of people together to make plans. And among the other tools, we, again, in understanding the emergency support functions, understanding the emergency management framework, we developed an introduction to the emergency support functions. This is just one example of the 15 that are there, where this one is for mass care, emergency assistance, housing, and human services. And the transportation aspects of this particular ESF are that self-evacuees need roadway capacity and services like fuel, and assisted evacuees are going to need transit or other transportation support to get to a shelter. So we go through all the 15 ESFs with these kind of links to transportation. Step two is understanding the situation. We have, we go through, you know, checklist on different possible risks and hazards, both natural and man-made, and point people to tools that can help them. FEMA and others have tools to help identify hazards, but also suggest that a local scan, local knowledge is very important for this. We go through resources, for example, the estimated number of evacuees, and that can rely primarily on census data and other sources. Institutions, you need to be considering hospitals, schools, nursing homes. And then you also, again, need to look at the needs of assisted evacuees who may need transportation assistance. And we go into more detail in this in step three, but this first step is just how to find out where people are and what needs they might have. And as we mentioned, this is just one example of the kind of resources and the information we provide. The livestock and other animals need to be thinking, do your zoos, do your animal shelters have plans in place? Are they planning to stay put, or do they have an agreement with others in nearby areas to handle livestock or whatever? And we point to resources like the National Alliance for State Animal and Agricultural Emergency Programs, National Animal Rescue and Sheltering Coalition, and American Veterinary Medical Association. Also mentioned that people do need to plan now for pets. You can't just say leave your pets alone, because many people won't leave if that happens, and that's not something we want to have. And at each step that we have here has text and table tools, and the full database tools and checklists are available in Word or Excel on a CD that comes with the book. So people don't have to reinvent these. They're there, ready. Third step is determining goals and objectives. We present example scenarios from the book Guidelines for Transportation Emergency Training Exercise, and also the list of events from the national planning scenarios We present information on traffic management tactics and information on contraflow lanes. So, and another of the tools mentioned there is the spectrum of considerations. This is adapted from Texas, their Houston-Galveston plan, and this is to look at how do you coordinate medical transportation and general transportation. There's an area that can be kind of fuzzy, and you need to think about it in advance. If you have people with a motorized wheelchair or scooter, they may be able to transfer independently, but you will need a lift or a ramp, and people need to be evacuated with their mobility devices, or you're just creating a major problem at the other end. If they are unable to transfer, then they can probably go to self-selected or accessible areas in general shelters, but they may need elevated cots or other accommodations. So we go through the transportation mode or vehicle, what the sheltering considerations are, and the types of access and functional needs. And this goes all the way through to those that may need major mobility assistance or medical assistance. They may need oxygen, medical monitoring, et cetera. These are probably going to need ambulances or perhaps transit vehicles that have been modified to accommodate stretchers and other needs. So this is something that needs planning in advance. It's very, very difficult to try something like this on the fly. And like Houston has had a lot of experience with this, and they still had some challenges with Hurricane Katrina and then Hurricane Ike that came right on its heels. Step four is developing the plan. Here we include flow charts, everything from the FEMA capability process flow for citizen evacuation and shelter to flow charts that include the different databases and the different kind of information that is needed for the different steps, and decision tree. And in this step in particular, we have lots on resources. There's at least 7 database templates and examples of the FEMA resource typing. And for example, in the public shelters area, we focus on the information that's important to transportation. We're not trying to step on the toes of emergency managers, but transportation people are going to need to know the physical address if they're going to be sending people or sending buses or other equipment to a shelter. They need to have directions from the evacuation routes with landmarks. They need access roads and alternate access roads in case one becomes disabled. Need parking capacity and like host capacity. How will transportation be notified when a shelter is full so they're not sending people to the wrong place? Also, whether it's pet friendly and whether it has a generator or not. Just the basics, but transportation needs to be included in this kind of information sharing. Another of the tools that we mentioned is timing is one of the first steps in figuring out the plan. And we do reference the real-time evacuation planning model, which is available online and free. You can just draw a circle and get an estimate of how long it'll take those people to evacuate under various situations. But that, like many other tools, is geared to people who have a car, who have their own way out. So one of the, this is another tool that this is developed from New Orleans to help identify, this is for the public assisted evacuation plan, people that are that need bus, rail, van, shuttles, ambulances, needs to start well in advance of a hurricane. and this is again for events with notice, looking at when you begin the contraflow on highways in that area, that makes sense. And they have, in their plan, they'll have transit and coach buses with passengers leaving the area before they start the contraflow. So they know that they've got people out when they need it. So this, for events with no notice, it's much more of a challenge, but the planning, again, needs to include people who don't have their own transportation and whether it's plans to help them shelter in place for some type of offense or to help people develop a buddy system to get out or other planning. It needs to be done in advance. It can't be just left to the last minute. Okay, step five is to prepare and review and approve the plan. With all the data gathering and the meetings and the prior steps, there is still a need to put it all together and write it down. For this, we provide a very detailed outline and detailed checklists, all adapted from King County and Washington State, and sample MOUs, Memorandum of Understanding, to help as well. These steps are going to be very familiar to emergency managers, after action reporting, updating the plan, and training, testing, and exercising. These are still geared to transportation, but again, are to make this work for help transportation and emergency management speak the same language. As noted earlier, there's additional materials provided, references, resources, checklists, and worksheets. Most of those are on the CD. Make it easier to get to and less bulky. And finally, as we mentioned, there's many meetings recommended in various stages of this collaborative process. And most of the steps include thought starters or discussion guides as tools related to the specific task. This workshop in a box at the end is really a more generic and comprehensive tool. This can be used for almost any kind of meeting, even though the topics and action steps are, and example goals are geared to evacuation planning, but this is to help someone who may be at a very junior level and has just said, okay, I want you to do this. And planning a meeting may seem very threatening and intimidating, but we help walk through the steps and how to make sure you plan it and implement it, but also follow up so that you can maintain momentum and keep things moving. So, finally then, to I encourage everyone to go online, if you don't already have it, to download the book, and or you can order a copy. Again, it comes with the CD and the resources. Anyway, we had a good experience developing it and hope that people will find it very useful. So here's my contact information, but I'll turn you back to the link. And so are there any questions?
Thank you very much, Deb. I appreciate that overview. That's a good way to, kind of get into it. We will go ahead and go over our instructions, which is to ask a question or make a comment. Please select host from the drop-down menu in the Q&A panel and type in the area underneath. And I'm going to go ahead and close the chat panel. so we don't get that in there by mistake. Okay, and then once you've submitted your question, I will read it aloud and our guest will respond via the bridge. Please do keep your question or comment related to today's topic and reasonably concise. And we are ready to begin now, so please enter your comment or question at any time. And I do want to mention that link you put up, Deb. We do have it linked from our homepage, from our background page,
okay.
And in our announcements. So hopefully folks will be able to find that okay.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. I don't have any questions or comments yet. Let me ask, this just came out this past spring. Was that correct?
Yes. I think it was in April of this year.
Yeah, I just wondered if you've had any time to actually get any feedback from anyone that's actually tried to, you know, download it and use it. And
I haven't received any feedback personally.
Mm-hmm.
I would be happy to hear from people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if we do, encourage you to get in touch with Deb. And she has, again, I'll put that contact information up a little later, and, of course, it will be in our transcript. I've got a question from Isabel. She says, Isabel McCurdy, excuse me, is there a cost in ordering a copy of the guidelines? In other words, if you want to order the book, how much does it cost? Do you know?
I believe that the NCHRP charges a fee. I don't, might be $20 or something like that. I'm not sure.
I think that will take you to the information, and of course,
yes.
And of course, the download, the PDF download, is free. So.
Yes.
So.
And you may be able to get a copy if, for example, if you attend the Transportation Research Board meeting. Sometimes they'll have copies of some of their documents available free,
gotcha.
But sometimes they sell them. So it just varies.
Very good. I do have a question, getting a couple in here now. I got one from David Owens, and he asks, was this planning and tool set up for mostly hurricanes, or was earthquake hazard considered? Or other hazards, you know.
Yeah, it's designed for all hazards. We have, throughout, we'll talk about notice events and no notice events. Some of the examples I gave for hurricanes, it's also for wildfires or floods, or terrorists, whatever. It's really designed to go through the principles of it planning, that any community needs to look at the hazards in their area and then develop and look at the resources in their area, look at their roads, look at their transit, look at the population that they're working with, how many people have cars, do they have lots of tourists, do they have, you know, seasonal populations, do they have college students. So every area needs to do their own planning, and this is to talk through the steps of the tool of how do you develop this plan, and, you know, who do you need to work with to develop the plan, and have lots of resources to help you along with that plan. But we cannot, you know, it doesn't say, okay, if wildfire is your risk, you do this and this,
right.
Or whatever.
When you were doing, just to follow up on that all hazards idea, when you were doing the literature review, did you all really look at the radiological, you know, around the nuclear plants, the evacuation planning that's going on there?
No, we're aware of the planning that's there, and actually we've found in other studies that if you have a nuclear plant in your area, they probably have a lot of protocols and warning systems developed that could be used for other needs as well.
Right.
For example, in New Hampshire, we found that they have a nuclear plant, and they had a plan to mobilize school buses that would be retrofitted to each carry, I think, 10 stretchers if they had to suddenly evacuate a nursing home near the nuclear plant. So if there is a nuclear plant, there may be additional resources available, and there will be other planning that can be used for other purposes. It just needs to be coordinated in advance.
Yeah, that's a good point. Mm-hmm. Okay, I have a question from MJ Wilson who asks, do you take into account different emergencies could require different travel routes? Or at least, as you point out, the guidance that you have to consider that, I assume.
Yes, but for example, we know that that's why when you're developing the local plan, you need to be looking at your risks and your roadways. And some places will probably have multiple parallel routes, and if one of them gets disabled, you need to know that you can go to a different route. So again, it's going through the local planning and thinking about these kind of things, that your transportation structures may become disabled in a major event. You may lose a bridge or a tunnel or a road and have to have alternate paths, alternate access. And that's just an important part of resiliency. And again, that's some of the kind of thinking that goes into the planning. And as you're doing exercises, it's important to have the transportation people at the table with the emergency managers, because the transportation people are always thinking about these kind of things. It's their job. So they can make emergency planning more robust by bringing their perspective. And they can also do modeling and simulation to say, okay, if one resource is out, then what happens? And how long does it take to move people under different scenarios? And does everybody need to move? Or can you stage it so only the people in the most vulnerable area leave first, so you've got capacity for those people to get on the road and get out of danger? Because, for example, in Hurricane Ike, that was one of the big problems, is that they had a million people moving and they only had maybe 100,000 or 200,000 that were really in danger. So that's an important part of the communications, is to identify really who is at risk and who needs to move when.
Okay, I have a question from Ricky Schellenbarger, and if you don't know the answer to that, this is fine. I don't even know. It says, was this, the guide, was this created with the newly released FEMA pre-disaster frameworks in mind, and do they support each other?
The research was completed in early 2012, so it used the Comprehensive Preparedness Guide 101, which was released, I think, in 2011. But if there's something that's come out after that, it wouldn't include it. But again, the planning, the frameworks change somewhat, but I think the principles of this, of working together, of planning, those don't really change.
Right. And hopefully these frameworks will be consistent with their own planning guidance.
Yeah.
Okay, Amru Romanis, when you were creating, wait a minute, it just slipped on me. Okay, when you were creating the guidelines, you mentioned that you worked with particular emergency managers. Fantastic. May I ask, were large cities represented at the same time, were smaller or rural communities represented? And I think you did mention Houston in particular for a large city example.
Yeah, we interviewed people like in Washington, D.C., who do a lot of planning with like 4th of July and presidential issues. And again, we held our workshop in our workshops in Missouri because we did want to get more of the rural perspective as well. And as you see, we included livestock. You know, that's something that not all the big city people think about, but is an issue in many parts of the country. So, yeah, we tried to be very inclusive in our interviews and planning as well. Does that answer the question?
I think very well. I have a question from Jane Cooley, who asked, would hospitals benefit from downloading this PDF?
Well, hospitals do need to, well, hospitals should have their own plans. If they're not already working with the emergency managers, they probably should be. It has some useful points, but this is really geared more to getting the transportation people to talking with the hospitals to say, do you have your plans in place? If you would need to relocate, do you have a sister hospital to relocate to? If you have ambulances on call, are you sure that they're not also on call by seven other hospitals that also might need to relocate in a major event? So it has those kind of suggestions, but it's not geared specifically to hospitals.
Right, but obviously the medical community would want to be involved in any regional plan.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you need those folks. Mm-hmm. Okay, Isabel, she says, Isabel McCarty again, signage is really important. For instance, on your screen, I notice a symbol on the road. What does that mean? I've never seen a sign like that before. And I think she's talking about the hurricane symbol in the contrafoil line there.
On the far left-hand side. Right. Those in places where they use contraflow, that is where they'll basically turn all of the lanes, both like northbound and southbound lanes might all be directed to go northbound. They have crossover points so that people can go in those other lanes, and it is a very complex thing. You have to, you know, cut the southbound flow up, you know, sometimes hundreds of miles away, closing off all the ramps so people aren't coming in the wrong way and all that. But it can be very useful to increase the flow, and this is to designate that In a contraflow situation, people can drive on the shoulder as well as in the regular lane so that you can get a lot more capacity going out.
Yeah, but we actually have a shoulder lane that will be open for the evacuation, but we don't have the contraflow. But it does appear that this symbol is fairly uniform across the southern states, the eastern states.
Yes, and there are in the book. There's also other pictures of the types of there's signs, for example, that you can fold up or fold down depending on whether you're using a roadway for counterflow to identify ramps and that type of thing. So, but that again takes a lot of pre-planning and thought. You don't do that on the fly. It's not going to work if you don't have a lot of planning and controls in advance and worked it out.
And that during this planning process, you need to be verifying your assumptions.
Oh, yeah. And you need to, again, working with law enforcement, because a lot of these things, you're going to have law enforcement in place to make sure people are the ramps are closed so people are not getting on in the wrong direction and that type of thing. And you often need law enforcement at key intersections to make sure the traffic is flowing. So, yeah, it is a collaborative process. Can't do it alone.
question from Adrienne, and she says, when large city evacuation planning is done, i.e. the D.C. area, are the smaller cities on evacuation routes contacted or consulted about the needs of huge numbers of citizens traveling through their jurisdictions? This could be frustrating for all.
Okay. I know in the D.C. area, I live in the D.C. area, and I actually live in Howard County, and Howard County is a suburban jurisdiction, and know that they would probably be a receiving entity rather than a, you know, you wouldn't have too many things that would happen there that would cause people to evacuate, but it could be very likely that people from D.C. or Baltimore would go to Howard County. And so they are included in the Metropolitan Washington Council of Government and Baltimore Metropolitan Council plans. I think West Virginia is also concerned that they might be a receptor, and they are really reluctant to do that. So there is some planning that goes on. There's not a lot of resources. I don't think there's a lot of goods stored in different places to accept a major evacuation. I think that would be dependent on the situation. You'd expect that national resources would be coming in if something like that happened, which is, again, why people are advised to have their own kits ready. But,
right. I wonder if you'd come to the end of our queue, but I wonder if you'd touch a little bit more on the planning needed for reentry.
Okay. Yeah, that's definitely in our cycle. We don't spend a huge amount of time on it, but do say that you do need to have plans. Part of it is having the infrastructure ready all at the same time and having notification ready. How do you let people know when things are ready? And so it is a matter of coordination. It is a transportation issue, but there's a lot of other infrastructure and a lot of others that have to be involved as well. You have to have law enforcement for making sure that looting and such is not going on. So again, it's transportation has to know that the infrastructure is there, but you also have to have utilities, schools personnel. All of that has to be coordinated. So it's not just transportation, but everyone needs to be working together on that.
Plus, if you relocated a bunch of folks to shelters and stuff and have no transportation, they got to get them home some way, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's go ahead and wrap it up. The one thing I did want to ask, other thing I wanted to ask you, Deb, is I'll go ahead and put our little feedback form up here. Are you working on other projects, you know, any particular plans coming up we should be kind of watching for?
Yes, I'm working on another project for National Cooperative Highway Research Program called A Guide to Regional Transportation Planning for Disasters, Emergencies, and Significant Events. And we're getting the final draft together now. It might be published early next year. If we can get it sooner, we will. And that is really looking at the principles of planning for large multi-jurisdictional events. So it's coming along very well. It's a very different emphasis from the evacuation one, but
okay.
seems useful.
Well, good deal. Maybe a year from now we'll get back in touch with you.
or less. Okay.
Yeah, so now you come back and talk about that one. Okay, let's go ahead and wrap it up for today. On behalf of Ava Jean, myself, and all our participants, thank you very much, Deborah, for being with us today and sharing this information. And we wish you continued success as you continue to work on these transportation-related issues in the future. I think it's very helpful to have someone that can kind of speak both languages, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and thank you for the great questions, too.
I did want to particularly mention to all our participants today and for the good questions. And if you do have an afterthought or a follow-up on question, certainly encourage you to contact Deb.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and folks, before you go, please do take a moment to give us any feedback you might have. And in the meantime, thanks again for everyone who's participated. We hope you have a great afternoon, and we'll come back again. Thank you so much, everyone.
Thank you.
We're adjourned. Bye now.
Okay. Bye.